When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm blue and lonesome as a man can be.
Rich man, poor man, how you gonna live? Will you turn out your pockets or will you give? Dig a hole.
Welcome to the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a southern storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, now on Pantheon Podcast, as you guys know by now. So check out Pantheon and find the music podcast of your choice. With me always is Jason. What's going on? How are we doing?
Hey, man.
What's up?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm doing wonderful. Kids are out of the house at school. Just had my 48th birthday. Everything's growing great. Cool. How are you doing?
I'm good. Can't complain.
Yeah?
Doing good. Oh, yeah.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Oh, no, go ahead.
You might be asking, are you going to ask about the LA Gun Show?
Yes, I'm going to ask about LA Guns.
That was cool, man. I said, when I texted you or messaged you, whatever, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, Phil Lewis, are you kidding me? Like, he sings amazing. And the whole band is incredible. And I got to talk to Ace for a couple minutes, you know, before the show, and bought one of his hats for his, and it's not a rescue, but his pit bull advocate. So,
yeah,
that's the same hat, same exact hat, same color and everything. Yep.
I bought that from at Rockin' Pod this past year.
Okay, cool. Right on.
Yeah.
That was great. I'd love to see him play longer, you know. But they played, I don't know, a little over an hour maybe.
Oh, that's not bad, because when I saw them play the headlining, you know, the first stop of this tour, they probably played an hour and 25 minutes. So you didn't miss a whole lot.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was incredible. Absolutely incredible. I was so impressed.
And hopefully Ace remembered you. I'm sure he did.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah. As soon as I walked up, he said, hey, man, what's up?
Yeah, he's just a nice guy.
So that was very, very cool. Yeah. So I don't know. What are we talking about? Are we talking about side projects, bands with projects?
Eventually, but I'm going to talk more about LA Guns.
All right.
What songs? I know Phil and the whole band, like, because I've been telling you, because I've seen them twice since last summer, and they blew me away every time. Like, what song stuck out to you?
Probably Kiss My Love Goodbye.
That was
cool. And, you know,
probably close that one out or close to the end of the set.
It was a little later on. Yeah. 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 They played Speed and they opened with Cannonball.
Oh yeah. So
that was cool.
I love Over the Edge, where Ace and Tracy do a little, harmonizing on the guitars. Sure. That's a great song.
Yeah. And Tracy did a whole kind of thing where he played snippets of like three or four songs before Never Enough. And of course they always go into Hell's Bells, I believe. Right.
Yep. Coming out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he talking about Love, Iron Man, and a couple other things that he did on there. Yeah.
Did your opinion of Tracy Gunn's guitar playing change?
Yeah. First time I've seen him live. I mean, I always knew he was great, but yeah. He's on fire. He's
underrated. I think none of us probably realized how good of a guitar player he was. Like, he's really good, you know, memorable songs and riffs, but he gets after it on guitar. He's as good as anybody.
Yeah. And he only used two guitars, you know, and at the end for Jane and Rip and Tear, had a telly.
Oh, did he play the Jimmy Page, like, dragon, the multicolored, like, painted telly? Yeah. Yeah, that's a sweet one. Did he play a Les Paul and then that telly, or did he have that single pickup Kramer or Pacer out there?
Is that what it was? Yeah, I thought it was like a Strat-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's when he played that the whole night, except for right at the end. Telly.
I didn't have the Les Paul out. Interesting.
No, he didn't.
Did Ace do the Explorer and then his Les Paul?
Yep.
That he played? Yeah.
Yep.
That's the Explorer. Remember, Gibson had lent him that he's trying to keep. It's great. It's a good look for him. It sounds wonderful. Like,
yeah.
Gibson would be dumb not to allow him to just keep that guitar.
Right. So, what else? What else about LA Guns? You got anything else?
I think that's it. I'm just really happy you finally got a chance to see them live because they're really freaking super good. And they haven't lost a beat, right? And they're probably as good as they've ever been.
Mm, for sure. Yeah, I can't wait to see them again.
Yeah, man. Good show. You just sit there for the hour plus with a smile on your face the whole time, and it feels like you're back in high school.
Yeah. No, that's exactly. Yeah, exactly. It was like 1989.
Yeah, man. It's just a good feeling. I took my friend Keith, who was a casual LA Guns fan. He loved it. He loved it. Like, he was like, this is awesome. I'm like, yep. Yes, it is. So everybody who's listening, if LA Guns is in your neck of the woods, absolutely see him, right, Brian?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Well, I thought we might talk about side projects, but we should just go right into our awesome returning guest.
Well, we are talking side project, but our awesome returning guest is the one and only Steve Gorman, one of our favorite drummers from our favorite band, the Black Crowes. He's got a new side project out there, Brian, right?
Yeah, the Bagmen. He, of course, is in Trigger Hippie, and they're not busy right now, so they're doing the Bagmen with Nick, the bass player in Trigger Hippie, and Luther from the North Mississippi All-Stars, and, of course, played in the Crowes for a while. And it was cool that I knew you'd been talking back and forth, emailing or whatever with Steve, and then all of a sudden he was available, so I'm like, hell yeah. You know, and then this is a Sunday. We don't do much on a Sunday, but if it's the right person, and it is.
Sunday's a holy day, but this is one of the holy members of a holy band. That's why we had to make our time for him.
So you're going to hear about the Bagmen, and you hear a lot of sports, of course. So you guys kick back, relax, and listen to our conversation with the one and only Steve Gorman.
You better hurry up quick, she don't flip the switch. Well, she get a laugh on kick, and in a pitch a bitch. And you know, sometimes I just ain't equipped to do anything about it. Hey, hey, yeah. She will make you believe the stars at night are left over.
We're here at the guest segment of the podcast, and Jason is going to introduce our awesome returning guest.
From one of the greatest bands of all time, one of the greatest drummers of all time. Welcoming back to the show, Steve Gorman. How you doing, Steve?
I'm all right. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on. I was asking you before we got on, like, how you fully acclimated to the frozen death weather up here in this area of the country.
I haven't had the full winter experience. I got up here January 2nd or 3rd. So, I mean, I had a lot, but I know it starts. I know you got to, you know, November 1 is when you got to, you know, start the swivel head looking around. Watch out for the hawk, the winter wind that comes in. So, you know, I'll let you know a year from now how I'm holding up.
Right on.
So, Brian, since Steve has not hit that full first year up north for the winter, what is the best advice you can give him, being a man from Fargo, North Dakota here?
I don't know, man. I've lived here my whole life, and it's like I still walk outside and go, it's cold. It's like,
yeah, I only had a few of those moments, actually. I live about a mile and a half from the station, and I got a heated garage, so I got about a 10-step walk from my car to the front door. And I bundle up like crazy. But there were a couple days, even, you know, covered head to toe, get out of the car at 5 a.m. and it's like 16 below zero. There's really nothing in my closet that's enough to make me not realize that, you know. It was, I had some near central nervous shutdowns a couple seconds there, like, holy shit. But I didn't talk about it much because, you know, the last thing you want to say to a bunch of Minnesotans is, God, it's cold out there today. Yeah, they know.
I think you've lived most of your life down south, right, until now?
Yeah, I moved to Kentucky when I was 10 from just south of Baltimore. And then, 10 to 21 there. Then I was in Atlanta for 13 years and then was gone for 5 years in New York and then L.A. And then, back in Tennessee. So I don't know, whatever that math is, well over, I'd say at least 75% of my life in the South.
What is the biggest culture shock, though, from being south to just generally warm weather to where you're at now?
I don't know. I mean, there's probably a bunch of things I've noticed. I've spent a lot of time here before. There weren't a whole lot of things I wasn't that I had no idea about. You know what I mean? I've got friends up here. I've got I've been here a lot. I just there's just different. I don't know if this would be culture shock, but speaking of just the weather, it was funny to me how surprised I was when everything melted in April. I couldn't get over how wide the streets were. I had 3 months of driving on narrow roads that I knew that was snow and ice pack. And that's not what the streets normally look like, but still that's what I got used to. That's what it was first. So once everything melted, I was like, oh my God, there's so much room to drive now. It's amazing how quickly, like in the South, when you get that first warm weekend after a winter, the winter's not as brutal and that first weekend isn't nearly as impactful. But you still see people, you know, there'll be a weekend, it could be in March, when everybody suddenly, you know, it's the first day it hits 70, everyone's in shorts and tank tops and you know, in like Nashville, you know, you're thinking, well, it's going to get cold again. We're going to have another frost, but go ahead and get it while you can. But up here, when that happened in late March, or maybe it was early April, there was a weekend when suddenly it was 68 and sunny. I mean, every fucking buddy was out in short. I mean, I've never seen more white legs and white shoulders out in the sun.
Yep.
I was like, man. And then, of course, 3 days after that, it was snowing again. But they knew what they were getting into up here. But the when the weather does turn, it's phenomenally invigorating. You know, like right away, just the entire mood of the city is so different. It's pretty, I mean, and people said that's what happened and they were right. It was pretty shocking.
Well, I know we don't have much time, so like we wanted to like get right into this band you got going, the Bagmen. Mm-hmm. Let's hear all about this. This would be great.
I don't know what there is to say yet. we've been talking about it for a long time. And I say we, Luther and I have gone back and forth for years about, man, we got to do something. And that's a common thing that musicians say when they like playing together. And then just at some point, probably a year ago, we were talking and for a little while we had thought about maybe we'll just do a two-man thing. And then I said, well, let's do a two-man thing, but with an organ player, three-man guitar, keys and drums, and just trying to think about what would be interesting and different. And when it came down to it, we just in talking, and this was last summer, a year ago, we were just saying like, no, the cool thing would be just find a bass player. And then we don't even have, we just plug in and go. And if we're going to do anything, the key is not to, it's not to overthink. It's not that we don't want to overthink. It's like, we don't even want to think. Like, let's just do something that's fun. Cause we really, really love playing together. Luther and I just dig the vibe anytime we ever play. And then, he actually said, well, what about Nick, who I'm of course in Trigger Hippie with.
Yep.
And at my 50th birthday party, which is now 8 years ago, there was just a big jam that went late into the night. And at one point, just as people would hop on and hop off, there was a little stretch where it was me, Nick, and Luther playing. And that night we were all like, man, that was cool. There was something happening there. And so it's just, long story short, last summer he said, well, man, I'd really like to do it. Let's do this next year sometime. And I said, great, I'm all for it. And then it was, I asked Nick if he was interested, and he said, yeah, absolutely. We had a call. So at some point, we were just texting ideas to each other. Here's a riff. Here's a song idea. And then we had the big call to say, okay, for real, let's do this. Let's get together and play. We're going to go to our friend's studio. Well, let's just record a bunch of songs as we write them, just to have them done. And the day that we had that call to officially cement this plan was the day after I took a gig in Minneapolis. And so we all three lived in Nashville. So it's like, we're all laughing about how easy it's going to be. And we're like, man, we just had 2 years of shutdown. Why are we waiting till now? But whatever, let's do it. And then in the middle of the conversation, I said, oh, by the way, I need to let you guys know I'm going to Minnesota in a couple of weeks. So that was the only, so far the only wrinkle. Cause of course, you know, they make airplanes and, you know, I just flew down to Nashville in May and we tracked a bunch of songs and then, just started booking gigs. And, you know, we don't have a lot this year because we didn't think we would, we don't have a lot of time, but the whole thinking is that we're going to play these shows with the hope that we get a bunch of, you know, stuff going for next year.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Yeah, hey, Steve, with you moving, that's kind of a good question. Are you guys sharing like files back and forth so you can take them home, look at them since you guys aren't all in Nashville now? Like how's the song going? Or did you just show up in person and that's what you're doing?
No, there was a few ideas that we sent back and forth, like just riffs or you know, just or, you know, like here's a song. You know, here's something I wrote. What do you guys think? But for the – I mean, we did that a little bit just enough to know that we were all on the same page. We really spent more time talking about covers. And not that we're going to do all the covers we suggested, but just getting that general list together to that's how you really establish what the vibe might be. So at this point, you know, we have 10, I think we have 10 songs recorded and we're just finishing them a couple at a time. We're just going to put two songs up online every time we get a couple finished. You know, when I say they're recorded, the basic tracks are done. Still need to get either vocals done or just get them mixed and mastered. And every time we do that, we'll just put songs up every, you know, month, every 6 weeks, two at a time. I don't think there's any reason to hit anybody over the head with 10 songs, especially for something brand new. And then really just feeling our way. Like we have shows this week. I imagine these will be different than the ones we did last month, just because like there's not a master plan for what we're doing. We kind of get up and wing it and have a good time. And I mean, honestly, there's no, like I say, every project I do, no matter what it is, the plan is always global domination, but there's not actually a plan for how to get that. It's just, what do you want to do with it? I don't know. Dominate, take over the world, but we're not going to sit down and do a PowerPoint presentation and try to figure out how to do that exactly.
So is this all happening when there's a downtime from Trigger Herpy or is there, you guys got stuff working at that at the same time? Like,
right now, Trigger Hippie's not, well, Trigger Hippie's not working this year. We did a few gigs, and for a million reasons that are just what happens when you have five and sometimes six people in the band, it just got really hard to get stuff together. And so we just are taking a break. And then this was always something, like I said, for a few years, we'd had this idea cooking and then finally just decided, well, let's just commit to that right now. You know, I don't know what's going on with Trigger Hippie other than we're just not working, but we're, you know, we recorded some new stuff that we hadn't, that we haven't put out. We'll just see what happens, but I don't want to, it's the most low key. We'll figure it out when we figure it out situation. So, and you know, Luther has plenty of other things he's doing. Nick has other projects, and then I obviously have other, you know, I'm up here. So it's, this is anything but a full-time commitment or priority right now. The priority is literally, as trite as it sounds, it's just to really do something that we love doing together. We really enjoy playing together. It's awesome. It's about as simple as it gets.
Awesome.
Hey, you were saying this run of shows coming up this week. So we're recording on August 20th, and happy belated birthday, Steve. You had a birthday the other day.
Thanks.
So fellow Leo's got to stick together. Mine was yesterday.
Right on. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Shows this week. So you said they're going to be a little bit different than your run in May. How so?
Oh, I just, they'll feel different. I mean, we're just, you know, just because that's the nature of this particular thing. We don't have a template. I mean, I just flew back to Minneapolis today from the West Coast. And I was thinking, like, I got to remind myself some of the jams we were doing. And I have one of the gigs recorded. And as soon as I started listening, I just stopped because I was like, well, I don't want to listen to that. We'll just figure out, we'll do something different this time around. Luther really is such a, he's not a repeater. You know what I mean? He doesn't like to try to cover the same ground. And so, like, in my mind, I'm just trying to keep up with him. And in his mind, he says, I'm just trying to keep up with you. And so, you know, and then of course Nick holds the whole thing together. So somewhere in all that, it's so far so good.
So you're talking about the simplicity of it. Is it just the songs just start from getting together with jam? Like no pre-idea of anything. It just like, let's see what happens.
There's always an idea. If not a song fully written, you know, Nick has a million songs. And so some of these are songs he'd already written and brought in. And then some were just as simple as, I just have an idea. Here's a riff. And then we just start throwing ideas around and playing. The recordings that we've put out so far, that we did 10 tracks in a few days. And I'd say probably half of them were the first or second time we played a song without then playing the third, fourth, and fifth and realizing it was take two. If we did a take and we all looked around, was like, that feels pretty cool. The whole idea is like, well, it's not going to get better. Like and just by the nature of things, like what's the song, I Can Feel It. There's a whole jam at the end, which we didn't discuss at all. We just had the basic blueprint of a song. Here's the arrangement. Let's play through it and see, and then just get to the end and we'll end it. And we just kept playing. And it's like there's a 3.5 minute song and then a jam for about 5 minutes after. And we finished the track. We finished it. We ended it and just went, well, cool. How are we going to beat that? You know, it just felt like something, you know, like, well, that we could learn it better, and then we would lose some sort of that, you know, I don't know, not to get too esoteric, but there is an essence to a song when everybody's looking at each other going, I think we all know where we're going with this. You know, there's just a vibe that you can't recapture.
So back when you and Luther were playing before, was there anything that that would happen in soundcheck with just you and him doing any duo stuff that
I don't remember that. I don't remember that. I know that when we were, you know, just in the Crows material, when we would be playing the jams, I mean, obviously with the new stuff, with the records we made with Luther, that material, because he didn't have to think about what had been there before and we weren't adjusting to his take on something we'd all played a million times, it was easiest with the new material, even after it was recorded, to then take it into different directions and jam, if that makes sense. It just, that stuff just was... those were his songs, as opposed to the stuff from the catalog that weren't his songs that he then put his own stamp on. But I mean, generally speaking, we just, I was at a place as in my playing and the band was at a place where there was just more exploration for the individual, for everybody to be playing with other people. I think, I know to me, the most, interesting playing within the band was the Luther years, just in that I would go off with Luther in the middle of a jam for a while. and I would play off Adam, and Adam and Luther would play off each other. So it wasn't always the rhythm section's establishing something, and then the lead guitarist and the keyboardist are winging it. It was way more everybody's doing different things. And sometimes it was great, and sometimes it wasn't. You know, frankly, I'm sure sometimes it was just like, ooh, we went way too far in some direction there. But just, and I'm not saying it's the best era at all, but at certain levels of how we were playing, it was the most interplay between all of the various members. You know, there was a long, you know, and so that was just, Luther and I just always felt great playing together. Like within that context, we always were like, man, that was, you know, we'd walk off stage together and had a lot of nights where we were just laughing like, man, that thing that happened in Wiser Time or Been a Long Time or whatever it is, you know, we just had each other's number a lot. And we always felt that way.
Did that feeling come back to you guys once you started jamming and getting ready for the Bagmen?
Yeah, it started right away. I mean, we didn't really, you know, the first thing we were doing was recording. You know, we talked about it a lot. We got in, and when we went into a studio, we went in there because we thought we were going to, we may get a few songs done, but we'll probably just have demos of ideas. And, you know, Buddy's got a great studio in his house. We could go in there low key, nice and cheap. And then we just found ourselves tracking songs right away. It just fell right into place. I mean, it really, you know, for everybody who says things about, oh, it was magic, it was this. I mean, it wasn't magic. It was just guys who like playing together finally play together again. So it's kind of exactly what we should have expected.
Just felt right.
Yeah, it really did.
So when I listen to these songs that you guys put out, I got a little bit of like a blues, jazz, improvisational, like power trio. Is that just what it sounded like? Or are you guys going for that angle?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's I like it. The there's a sparseness to the tracks. There's, you know, if there's an overdub for guitar, it's just one rhythm part under something he's already soloed or vice versa. You know, we're not doing, there's one tune that we have where we're going to add, there's going to be a, you know, there's horns and backup vocals. There's a lot going on exactly one song. And the rest are pretty much just how you hear them, you know?
Yeah.
And again, like without having too much of a master plan, that's one thing that we wanted is just for it to just be completely, you know, what you see is what you get. We don't want to record a bunch of stuff that we then can't go recreate live, or at least, you know, we don't want to have to be at a point where we're like, well, we really can't do that song without keys, or we can't do that song without the horns. We have one song that's just calling for that stuff, but I imagine it'll be fine without it. We just want to put stuff, you know, we always said, let's just shine up one of these things and leave the rest of them as they are.
So is it difficult to put into words like what Luther brings to any musical situation, seeing how he grew up, you know, and his dad was a producer and all that? I know you mentioned before in the book that you guys in the band were really reverent to him and everything, his upbringing. Is that, you know, he just seems, I would imagine he's just like walking music DNA.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's touched. I mean, that's the word I've always used for him. You know, there's a handful of musicians, or specifically a handful of guitarists that just, it's not that they have a signature sound, but it's just that they have a thing that goes just beyond that, you know, a sound and a feel and a touch and a vibe and a, you know, he's an incredibly aggressive and pretty player at the same time. He does a lot of things pretty uniquely in that regard. I mean, you know, I know a million guitarists that I love the way they play, a lot of great musicians, but he's just on this short list of guys that are, to me, just very singular. I felt that way before I played with him ever. You know, the first time I saw the All-Stars was probably in 2000 or maybe 99 even. And, you know, he was a kid, and I just sat there and thought, okay, well, there's another one of those guys. You know, he's just got his own thing.
So what are the set list going to look like this week? You know, how many songs you doing? You throwing some covers in?
Honestly, I don't know. We'll figure it out Tuesday. I mean, seriously, I imagine we'll play, you know, we were playing about 2 hours before, 90 minutes to 2 hours. And we have some new covers that we're going to throw together and see if we can hammer our way through them at soundcheck. And if so, we'll play them that night. Yeah.
So I'm imagining we might be winding down here. I'm thinking we probably want to have a little bit of sports talk. And I know I have one question. I don't know, Jason, I would imagine.
Get the music stuff out of the way, because that's what Steve said first. And then we can do some quick sports stuff.
Well, my one question is, how do you rank, Steve, how do you rank Target Field amongst other major league parks?
It's pretty great. It's really nice. It's one of the last of the I saw all the old parks back in the 90s, and there's a handful of the brand new ones, the ones from the last 10-15 years, I still haven't gotten to, and this was on there. So the first time I walked in, I just did the walk like you do. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how tiny the area is, like around mm-hmm. it. Like they wedge that sucker right into like one city block. It's just that alone is really impressive, you know. But it's got a great feel, great lines. I've been to a few games and been in different sections and just walking around. It's fantastic. I mean, the first time I went, it was still really cold. Mm-hmm. You know, just like, man, okay. But the summer games have been awesome.
Yeah, I've been there a couple times. It's a nice place.
I have no problem. Close it. You know, I have no problem cheering for the Twins when the Orioles are not involved. You know,
I was going to ask you. I'm sure you went to Orioles game.
Oh yeah, I did. When the O's are playing, that's a different thing. Especially now that they actually are good again. I'm still every day. I see those scores and I watch the highlights, or if they're on, I watch it, and I'm just like, man, it has been so long since I've felt like this. It's pretty great.
They have the best record, don't they, in baseball, or at least the AL?
Atlanta does. They have the best. It's at the Braves and then the Orioles, which you know, have been my two teams. I mean, Orioles have been my lifelong team. And then when I moved to Atlanta, I figured, well, I can have a National League team too. So the Braves, although I will say, but I when the Braves won the World Series a couple of years ago, I was a lot happier for all my friends who are Braves fans. I wasn't still like a day-to-day card-carrying Braves fan at all, but I was happy to see them win it.
How far do you think Baltimore's going this year?
I think they'll go pretty far as long as they don't have to play Atlanta. I think the Braves are probably a little deeper, but I mean, there's no reason to think they can't. I mean, I've seen people question the pitching, but I mean, if you got the best record, and the thing I like about them, they don't strike me as they got that nice, really young. We're too dumb to know how weird, how much pressure there is. I mean, that could be their wild card, you know, their X factor for this playoffs, you know, like they got a bunch of kids and they are just playing really good baseball very consistently.
Yep. I can see my wife making a cameo behind us. Hi, Saskia.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, I got a dog right over my shoulder. So, you know, more than
dog right here.
she's cleaning out the basement and bringing stuff. Our kids just left for college. So we're like cleaning out the house. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my wife is moving our daughter into her apartment right now for her junior year.
Are all your kids out?
Yeah, we have two, and they're both. I got a senior and a junior in college.
Oh man, yeah, it is. So I've got a freshman and a junior in college now. They're both mm-hmm. going to Ohio State. So sorry, like I don't know why my kids end up going to Ohio State.
I just got one of those. Go ahead.
There are worse things that could happen. I mean, you know, they're going to get a fine education. They're having the time of their lives. I don't care.
But Michigan football owns them right now. They could easily do 3 years in a row.
Yeah. I'm friends with Robert Smith, the running back who, you know, was on the Vikings for years. He's been a buddy forever. And he did not fare well against Ohio State in the Earl Bruce days. And I always –
oh, boy.
As they and Ohio State just ran off like what 19 out of 22 or something, or maybe it was even worse than that. And he would all, you know, I get that text from him and I'd always go, yeah, but these are, you know, it's a shame you don't have any good memories like these, you know, and I have to take my shots where I can because Michigan might be on top right now, but man, it's still my son's 23. I did not raise him to be a Michigan fan. He just took it on. It's, you know, it's in the house. I'm watching. He decides he's going to be a fan. And I tell him about, you know, like, well, when I was a kid, this was a great rivalry. And in the 90s, Michigan owned Ohio State. Since he was born, I think they've won four times. You know, and he's just like, this sucks. Why am I a Michigan fan? To which I always say, leave. Go somewhere else. I don't care. You don't owe me anything.
Plenty of others. Man, Earl Bruce and John Cooper just absolutely could not beat Michigan.
Or no, it was Cooper. It was Cooper. Not, Cooper Robert was there with Cooper. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cooper was. Yeah. the worst. They would have a top three team and just couldn't get over the hump against Michigan.
Yeah, every time. And my son's like, two of his really his closest friends went to Michigan, and so they had a great last couple of years. You know, their last two seasons in Ann Arbor were awesome for them.
All right, I just got one other question, sports, and you mentioned the Vikings. So when you moved to Nashville, you talked about adopting the Titans. Will you be adopting the Vikings, or are you still a Titans guy?
Same way with – I'll cheer for them if the Titans are not involved. You know, like, it's fine to say – I mean, I obviously want to see them win. It's great. And I was a – at different times of my life as a kid, I liked different Vikings teams. It's not like that much of a stretch to say I can totally, you know, be with the Vikings. If they were to – through 900 miracles play the Titans in the Super Bowl, I'm Titans all day long. I'm not that wouldn't even be a question.
What's the lookout for the Titans this year? How do you think they're gonna do?
I don't know. I honestly haven't been paying that much attention. I'm far more excited about Nashville SC, and I've gone back for some games for that over the season. I wasn't at the game last night. I had a trip planned for months, and I was just watching it last night. I'm like, man, my team, I got season tickets. I'm so excited. I waited my whole life to have soccer be prevalent and good where I, you know, like it is, like the MLS is turning into, and Messi's in the stadium and I'm not there. It really was driving me nuts.
I think Nashville ruined FC Cincinnati's season, right?
They beat them in this tournament, and then, yeah. But no, they're still way ahead in the standings. They're still up top.
Okay.
The regular season starts back. Regular season starts back like today for some teams. There's only 8 or 10 games left for most teams, and then the playoffs start.
Okay. I don't pay super close attention. I'm a Cincinnati sports fan, but not paying real close attention to soccer. And even living in Columbus, we've got the crew here, but
yeah,
only have so much time. You're a big soccer guy. What'd you think of the Women's World Cup?
It's fantastic. I wasn't at all surprised that the U.S. women lost. I was surprised they played so well against Sweden, actually. I think it's hilarious that everybody's so freaked out that the rest of the world is caught up to us. Like that was never going to happen. Like, you know, like everybody else flipped the switch like 12 years ago, like, hey, we should really invest in the women's game. And that's why you have, you know, the English team, the English league, I should say, you know, Arsenal has their women's team, Tottenham, Man City, Man U. They have 40,000 people at all their games. It's big. You know, they just, once they got it in their heads, all these European nations especially, that it's a game that women can play too, it's just a matter of time. Because when England decides to really back their women's team, they're going to do it in a way that the U.S. is never going to keep up with. U.S. soccer is just a bunch of knuckleheads, man. I mean, it's terrible. They've always just been, just with the coaches they hire, they get it right sometimes. They get it really, really painfully wrong. But even as much as the fact that the women had to fight so long for equal pay when they've been the best thing for soccer in this country for 30 years, it's just the same old stupid shit. You know, you get people in charge who aren't necessarily putting – I mean, I was watching that MLS game last night, Nashville SC versus Miami, and the guy that runs MLS, the commissioner of the MLS, Don Garber, I'm watching him, and that's a guy whose sole goal in life is to grow the league. That's what he gets up every day and thinks about doing, and he makes decisions that are there to do that. And U.S. soccer just has not ever figured out how to simply grow the game. And we don't have to have an American brand of play. We have to have a good brand of play, whatever that is. And I don't know. We teach the game weird to our kids. We still haven't caught up to the rest of the world on such a fundamental base level on how people learn the game. And it's happening. We're making ground. You know, the women were ahead of the world. Now the world's caught up, and the men are slowly still edging forward. But, you know, it's I love the teams. I support them. But I just think that the organization is a mess always.
Are there too many options for kids to play different sports these days?
I think kids should play a bunch of sports. I mean, the best, you know, it's nuts. And soccer is its own worst enemy with this because they want to siphon kids off at 6 years old now.
Yep. And play club, you know, do nothing else. Yeah.
It's like by the time they're 12, 13, maybe, but playing as many sports. I mean, there's just too many great athletes who grew up playing four sports who all say, I mean, even a guy to this day, like John McEnroe, he'll say like, yeah, I was the number one tennis player in the world at 19. I was playing high school basketball at 17. You know, it's like, it helped.
Yeah.
I just think that it's funny. Soccer in so many parts of the world is the sport of the street. And here it's the sport of the suburb. It's the sport of the minivan and the orange slices and the leagues, and let's all learn this game. It's just so different the way we do it. But, you know, I mean, like I said, I'm always cheering for the national teams, but they got a lot of work to do to stay relevant, especially on the women's side, because some of the women in that tournament this time around, it's the first Women's World Cup where there was clearly, I mean, the final eight teams, none of them had ever won a World Cup before. It was like, Okay, this is a whole new realm. And that's ultimately phenomenal for the game, for the women's game.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for England, both from the men's and women's team at this point, just when they think they're going to win.
Yeah, I was on a long drive, 3 a.m. drive to the airport to get up on an early flight. I was out on the coast.
Well, shit, you're going to get hit by a hurricane.
So I didn't, we were north. We were up in Oregon,
okay,
up on the coast. So we, I didn't see the game, but I'm not surprised. England was missing, you know, three of their best players weren't even in the tournament the whole time. You know, and then I mean, they were good, but I don't know. Spain just had a bit of a extra spark throughout the whole thing. Every time I saw them play, I was like, man, they've really got something.
Yeah. I think women's soccer also translates well for viewership. Like, it's good to watch. You know, there's a lot of women's sports that don't necessarily, but I have no problem with women's soccer. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I've watched the women's, I mean, I've always watched the first World Cup in 91, and then obviously 99 when they won at the Rose Bowl. I've always thought the team was great.
Was the 99 the year they did was it the shootout with China? Was that like
2003?
Okay.
99.
Yeah, that was that was awesome. I think that's really what helped spark more interest in the women's, mm-hmm, these national team.
Well, the interest is there among people. It's just a question of, you know, a bunch of dudes who run TV networks and call advertising agencies that are run by dudes who have sponsors that are run by dudes, and getting a bunch of men to go, someone wants to watch this. I mean, it takes a long time to make people realize, like, you know, half the planet are female. They probably would like to watch women's soccer. What a crazy concept.
Well, for guys, you've got a bunch of fit female athletes running around. I mean, it's not horrible from that angle either.
It's just, no, it's not. And that team's always been the best of, you know, it's, to my mind, a perfect representation of what you would hope a national team from the United States would be. So, yeah. It's just good soccer too. And soccer and basketball are my two sports. And I will admit freely that women's basketball is not as entertaining for me as women's soccer. And I don't know why that is. Because when I was in college at Western Kentucky, their women's team was a top 10 perennial back then. And I used to go to their games, and I loved it in person. And I guess, like a lot of people, maybe the physicality that you're lacking in the men and from the men's game in basketball, maybe that just is so much a part of it. I can't get over that in my own hump. You know, technically, fundamentally speaking, women's basketball's far more. You know,
it's fundamental. That's what you're saying. It's spectacular. Fundamental ball.
You know, if you're watching X's plays and O's. If you're into and you know, as many people, how many dudes do you know that like hate the modern NBA? They just don't see, and they put on the WNBA, man, they're playing fundamentally perfect basketball. And I say that while saying, but it doesn't hold my interest nearly as much as women's soccer always has. But then again, I love soccer. I'll watch any soccer game. I'll go to a high school game tomorrow and be really happy to be watching it.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on some good points, though, about it doesn't translate as well to the basketball side as it does soccer. Because I'm with you, man. I'll watch some women's basketball, and, like, you see the ball movement, you see the plays, mm-hmm, you see all that. And, like, this is, like, what basketball is supposed to look at. But
yeah,
for an entertainment factor, it just doesn't have the same, like, pizzazz as the men's do.
I can say this, I played basketball, you know, through high school. And then when I was in college, that's really – I didn't play for my university, but I played ball 4 hours a day, every day. I mean, I just went to college to get really good at basketball, essentially, looking back. And me and some guys on our team, we had a bunch of, this is in Kentucky, a lot of great ball players on campus. And we used to go scrimmage against the women's team for 2 years, for a couple of years, my sophomore and junior year, right before the NCAA tournament. The coach knew a few of us, and he'd say, hey, bring five guys over, bring five ballers, and run up and down the court with my girls just to beat them up a little. He'd say, go in there and work them. And I was a really good high school basketball player, and I would play with four guys who were all way better than me. And those women would run us off the court, man. I mean, you know, like for real.
Yeah.
It's funny every year when you'll hear people on Sports Talk saying, I could get on the court. I could go out there right now at 30 years old and play with the Tennessee Volunteer Lady Vols. And I just sit there and think, you have no idea what you're talking about. It's not even close.
That's like they say the same thing with tennis. Like, oh, we could beat a women's tennis player. One of my friends growing up, his sister won like the Ohio State high school championship 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
And like, she would blow anybody off the court, you know?
Yeah. My son just told me a story. He went to high school with a girl who was the top ranked like 14-year-old in the state of Tennessee at 14, 15, 16. And she played college tennis. But when he picked up the game, he got really good, really fast. He's a good athlete. And he was feeling like, man, I think I got this down. And then he went out to just hit with his friend. And he said, all right, play 100%. She's like, I'm not going to do that. He's like, come on, I think I got this. And then he just browbeat her into playing at 100%. And he was just like completely destroyed. You know, he was just like, she's tiny. You know, she's half his size. And she just literally obliterated him. That's how that works.
Yeah, I think probably a lot of people need to go through that a little bit to bring their thoughts back.
Probably all so. Right, Speaking of women and speaking of sports, speaking of music, there's an artist named Margaret Glaspy, who I've just heard her name and I've never seen her, Glaspy. She just put out a new record Friday, a new album, and it is fucking great. Echo the Diamond. It's really, really, really good. And she's a badass guitarist.
Brian, I need to send you that link because, Steve, I listened to some of her stuff and her postings. I'm very impressed.
I'd heard her name. I heard one of her songs a few years ago, but nothing registered. I just heard a song on the radio here in town on an NPR station played a song. And then I put it together that I know a guy in the business and we were chatting last year and he actually manages her, but I had never talked with him about her. I called him. I go, hey, do you manage Margaret Glaspy? And he said, yeah. And I said how much I love the new song. So he sent me a link to her album like 3 weeks ago. And I've listened to it top to bottom. I mean, over and over and over again. It's like my favorite record in a couple of years.
Awesome. Hey, if you don't think they'll mind, would you send me your friend's contact if he's managing her? We'll see if we can't get her on.
Sure.
Give her a little. We are the 14th rated blues podcast out of 45, Steve. So it's like, it's a big deal to be honest.
Yeah,
we'll take, you know, after your episode coming back, we'll probably be in the top 10. So we'll, you know.
Well, her this record is essentially live too. Like, it's a three-piece guitar. She has a crazy rhythm section, the drummer Dave King, who's awesome, and all the tracks are done live, and that's part of it too. The songs are great, she's great, but the tracks themselves have so much, there's so much dynamic playing, and, you know, really really moody from all three. The bassist is phenomenal. I mean, it's just, that's what first got me was the tracks. I just couldn't even hear the song because I was like, oh my God, listen to that rhythm section. And then it just, the tunes are all great though. It's really good.
Yeah, awesome. No, for sure. We'll definitely check her out.
We always ask our guests to turn us on to something new. We didn't even have to ask you. You just gave it. So thank you for that.
Yeah. He was ready. He was ready for that one. All right, I know you're.
Nine times out of ten, I don't have a new record I love, and it's always such a bummer. I'm like, man, I'd love to be excited about an album, so I'm happy to have one right now.
You know, we love promoting a lot of the newer artists, and so that's a big part of what we do because it's so hard for anybody out there to get their sound out or their music out. You know, I mean, as you know, with the Bagmen. So, two quick sports questions, and then we'll close out with the Bagmen stuff. Who's going to be a surprise team in the men's college basketball season?
I have no idea. None whatsoever. So, of course, I will say that would be the Western Kentucky University Hilltoppers because I have no insight into anything in college basketball right now.
Neither do I. I was hoping that you would give me
some. No, that sport lost me a while ago, man.
All right. You got an NBA pick for this year?
If they stay healthy, no one's beating Denver. I mean, Jokic is just – I love Giannis, but people just got tired of voting for Jokic. Jokic is so far and away the MVP of that league the last three, 4 years. I mean, this should have been the Nuggets' third year in a row. They just finally all got healthy. You know, if they were healthy, if they stay healthy, when that guy is setting the tone for your locker room culture and who you are as a team – and when he sets every table and when he makes everyone play to that level, he's just spectacular to me. I love him. So I would say the Nuggets are, if healthy, man, I don't think anyone's beating him.
He's a throwback player where he'll set the screen, he'll make the pass, he'll do whatever he needs to do. Yeah, he's great to watch.
He's awesome.
All right, the Bagmen, Steve. What's next for the Bagmen? You guys looking to release a full album at some point?
I mean, we're going to put everything up online and then we'll see. I mean, honestly, we've got these three shows this week. We've got we're going to be playing a couple more shows. We're going to announce a couple more shows for November, like probably later this week. And then we're just trying to line up a show. We want next year to be busier. And we definitely want to be on festivals and just get out and be in front of as many people as possible. So, which means we're already trying to book things right now, and we've got some things that are on hold, and we'll see how many of them actually come through.
Have you ever played the Southgate House there in Northern Kentucky or been to it?
No, nope.
That's a cool venue. You guys are gonna dig it.
Yeah, I've heard about that from other people.
Yeah, it's got a good vibe to it, so I'll see you guys there on Wednesday. Right on. And I'm gonna throw some nice hologram stickers at you guys too, that you guys can, you know, put on your gear.
Bring them on.
Help promote us.
Stickers are always welcome.
So when Margaret Glassby comes on, we'll move up in those rankings, those podcast rankings.
Nice.
Sure. Oh, Brian, anything last for Steve?
Oh, man, just thanks for being on, man. We all respect, all love. It's always a pleasure talking to you, brother.
Yeah, right on, fellas.
Thank you so much for Steve Gorman for coming back on the podcast and talking with us. Always a joy. Great to know he's acclimated to winter. It kind of sounded like he didn't really need to acclimate. I know,
he didn't seem shocked.
Like you said, you know, all you got to do is hear about Minnesota and know what you're getting yourself into.
I'm sure he's gone through your neck of the woods with the crows many times in the winter.
Oh, yeah.
I knew what to expect. He's just kind of a laid back guy that kind of takes it like it is. It's kind of, you know, feels like to me at least.
Yeah. Well, it kind of sounds like the Bagmen is just kind of a get-together jam and see what happens kind of band, which we love to hear about.
Yeah, and with playing with Luther in this, this is the second other band now he's played with, ex-Crows guitarist. When Trick or Hippie originally started, he had Jackie Green on that first record, you know, and now he's playing with who's playing guitar for the new Trigger Hippie, the last Trigger Hippie. It was... the guy from Band of Heathens who plays with Nick, the bass player, who also does, right? So anyway, second side project with a ex-Chrome guitar player. And you know what? Luther Dickinson is a lot of people's second favorite guitar player the Crows ever had.
Yeah, a lot of people will say that. I mean, yeah, for sure. And I would agree. It totally made sense to me when he was in the band. So, and obviously him and Steve have a great vibe playing together. So it's I'm just thrilled that they're doing this thing.
And I've heard the first three tracks out. I really like them. They definitely have like a jazzy or bluesy improvisational edge to it with some jamming in there. So I think it's going to translate really, really well live. And, you know, Nick is a great guitar player, bassist and singer. I saw, so when I was at Rockin' Pod this past spring and we were at the Nashville Bowl, Nick was jamming with Audley Freed and just a random drummer. Remember, I ran into Audley and Nick there. So he's like, just likes to just go out and play. So I'm looking forward to it. Like I told you guys, I'm going to see the show coming up this week. I'm super excited.
Yeah, I'm happy for you. Yeah, for sure.
And I'll give a concert rundown on our next episode that we record.
That will be very cool as well. So, you know, I can't wait till they get up in this area. Wink, hint, wink.
Wink. Well, we might have heard some inside scoop. So, yeah. you'll probably get a chance to see them at some point this winter, weather permitting.
And Steve, turn us on to a new artist that we're looking forward to checking out.
Margaret Glaspie, yep, and I'll be reaching out to her manager to get. Listen, if Steve recommends the artist, guess what?
We're checking her out.
We're going to check her out. Absolutely. And it was good to talk to him. We didn't have as much time as we did last time, but it was a fun conversation.
That it was. So we're going to check out her music. You guys, we thank you for checking us out and listening to us. So always remember, Southern Rock is Reverent, Blues is Blood. We'll see you next time.
The bottom line. It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.